Well, today's presentation is entitled Three Generations of Veterans. This will be a presentation of story and song. On this Memorial Day Sunday, I would especially like to honor those veterans that we have known in our lifetime, roughly over three generations of veterans. Most of us did not live during World War II, but many of us had parents and grandparents, uncles, aunts, and cousins who did live in that time following the Great Depression. We youngsters have felt the impact of the subsequent conflicts much more keenly, especially Vietnam and the Middle East conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today I'm going to draw from several sources focusing on the accounts of one or two veterans from each generation. Our source from World War II is my father, David Proud, who served from 1943 to 1945 in the U.S. Army Air Force. Our sources from Vietnam are Al Seaver, who was in Vietnam from 1968 to 1972, and myself. I was in the Army in 1971 and 72. Our source from the Middle East conflicts, Iraq and Afghanistan, is Neil O'Connor. Neil is a member of Vets on Frets and couldn't be here today, but he has a message for us that he wrote. And he was in the reserves for 20 years in the Army, and he served in Iraq in 2004 and 2005. When he came back, he worked as a counselor in the Madison Vet Center until 2017. So let's start with World War II. Starting, my dad, David Proud, enlisted in the U.S. Army on March 29, 1943 in Kalamazoo, Michigan at the age of 20. Years after the war, he finally sat down and narrated his story in great detail. He was assigned to the 15th U.S. Army Air Force, which flew B-24 Liberator bombing raids over southern and central Europe out of Italy. They targeted factories and oil refineries for the Axis war machine. Dave's home air base outside of Cerignola, near the east coast of Italy, was just an open field with metal runways of huge interlocking metal strips. In his own words, he narrated, putting up planes for a mission, you usually had about 30 planes max. All in all, in a total mission, we might have anywhere from 300 to 500 planes at a time aimed at a given target. We were divided into groups and each group into squadrons. Those were our units. I found out that on his 11th mission on July 25, 1944, his crew of 11 encountered anti-aircraft flak near the Linz, Austria tank works target. The German anti-aircraft tactical firing officer gave this report. It was written in German, but I have had it translated. After the first formation was battled, up to a start, the bombers, up to a change point, the targets were changed to the next group. This bombing formation flew in the same direction except at a higher elevation. It consisted of about 26 aircraft. Firing commenced at 11:09 at an altitude of 8,900. The next account I will read is from the Reichsminister of Aviation office in Berlin. The heavy flak battery 6784, working with heavy flak batteries 388, 1.503 and 2.145, is credited with its fourth kill, a Liberator, shot down on July 25, 1944 at 11:11 a.m. So my dad described what he saw from his point of view, writing in a military deposition 18 months later, This was for an inquiry into the death of the pilot and three other crew members who were killed in the action. I was the radio operator on the aircraft in question. Our ship was hit and caught fire with no warning. I left the ship following Sergeant Latondra, the tail gunner. I had already observed one man bail out from the front of the plane. After my chute opened, I observed six parachutes in the vicinity and saw some flaming wreckage falling, which probably was our ship. I was made prisoner 7 days later and arrived on a German transit camp at Wetlar near Frankfurt on 5 August 1944. I had never met any of the crew prior to that mission, so I did not even know their names. He was held a prisoner of war in a prisoner of war camp, or Stalag, until the spring of 1945, when the prisoners were liberated as the Russians pushed back the German forces in eastern Germany. I'm not going to comment and elaborate. I'm going to let you just listen to these accounts and some of the music that we have written about this. And our first song will be Letter to a Hero that I wrote in his memory. Came home a hero from a war I could not know. You married Mom before I came 75 years ago. Like others like you, almost killed, shot down from a flaming plane over an Austrian field. Years later, you relented and shared your tale, it's true. But never did you accept that you were a hero too. Don't look back, you told me. Always look ahead, but I wish that we'd had more time and you'd have listened to what I said. So thanks for all you taught me, for the silent love you gave. We got close right at the end and beat the approaching grave. Now I embrace all your gifts. You just by being you. Of course you had shortcomings, but you are my hero too. So, we'll move on to the Vietnam War. Al Seaver, a Vietnam vet in the Army, enlisted out of high school in 1968. By contrast, I was drafted after college in 1970. I was stationed in the Army in Germany. Anyway, Al writes in his memoir, this was from the same book that Rick read from, "Why did I join the Army? I viewed the military as an escape from small-town boredom and monotony. I wanted to experience adventure in capital letters. At 18, I wanted to experience war and helicopters. I picked helicopter training. This ensured I would get into combat. For most of us, helicopter school meant becoming a crew chief on our own ship. The crew chief flew as the left door gunner. Door gunner was the coolest job in the Army. Say Vietnam and you think helicopter. Say helicopter and you think door gunner." By the time he was shipped home 4 years later, Al Seaver had done a lot of growing up. "I sat and thought about what I had seen in country. The wounding and the killing of Vietnamese and Americans, the heartaches in the homes of both sides, the widows, the orphans, the cripples. Had anything been achieved worth the suffering? Right or wrong, I knew it was really irrelevant which side I had served with. If I had learned anything, it was that war was foolishness. To those on the other side who would hold each of us accountable, causes mean nothing. We were all being tested individually to test our mettle. Combat was just another medium for testing." In 1970, I worked all summer after college, waiting to be called up, what with my number eight draft lottery number. I was a conscientious objector and would be trained as a medical corpsman, like Rick was a medical corpsman, and was stationed in Germany as the war in Vietnam wound down. So let's move on to the Middle East, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Neil O'Connor is a member of Vets on Frets, and I'll read what he wrote for this occasion. "I am a retired clinical social worker and a retired U.S. Army social work officer. I served in positions ranging from social work officer up to hospital executive officer before transferring to a Madison Combat Stress Control Unit. I served there for 5 years before transferring to a Minneapolis-based Combat Stress Control Unit, and then I was deployed to Iraq with them in early 2004. At the major U.S. base in Balad, Iraq, I led a team of about 24 soldiers, a mix of clinical combat stress providers and supply, maintenance, and operations soldiers. During our time there, my team experienced daily mortar and rocket fire while providing services to the 25,000 plus base population. I remember struggling with a sense of constant random danger from the usually unaimed indirect fire. Gradually, our team adopted a what happens, happens approach to the situation, which allowed us to focus on our mission. I returned home with the unit in early 2005 and then returned to my original hospital unit for another 2 years. My 30-year reserve career finished in 2012 in Madison. Before my final retirement in 2017, I was a clinical social worker at the Madison Vet Center, part of the federal VA system, working directly with war veterans and their families, providing readjustment and therapy services to my sisters and brothers in arms. I would describe my veteran clients as exhibiting the following behaviors. One, a strong hypervigilance, which only gradually receded with time at home. For some, it does not lessen without intervention, consisting of increased awareness of the source of the vigilance and gradual desensitization to cues in the non-military environment. Second behavior, struggles with returning to normal life, ranging from what do I wear today? The military makes that decision for a soldier. Struggling with the differences between the reliance on other members of the team or squad versus the less connected feel of the civilian workplace. Struggling with the perception that life was somehow simpler in the military in general and in the war zone in particular. Third behavior, a struggle to communicate with others, rooted in the military value of need to know and communications security. And the last, for many, a decision to make significant changes in their lives, especially around educational and career opportunities, and having less inhibition to taking a risk and trying something new. To assist struggling veterans, Neil recommends the following. First, make sure concrete needs are met: housing, income, food, safety. He then recommends asking what and not why questions. What happened? What bothers you? And listening carefully to the answers. Hearing their own responses often helps veterans and others actually discern their own solutions or paths out of a current struggle. Another recommendation is referring veterans to the VA, the Vet Center, or the Dane County Veteran Service Office. These are good steps that sometimes help. And finally, Neil favors saying welcome home instead of thank you for your service, especially for Vietnam and Vietnam era veterans who were decidedly not welcomed home on their return. So I'll just summarize by saying that I never thought I would be drafted. I never thought I would get to give guitar lessons to veterans, such as to my friend Roger, who trained in Al Seaver in Vietnam in the art of left door gunner. I never thought I would get to play in a band called Vets on Frets. And I never thought I would write songs about these experiences and relationships. Veterans have had many different assignments under many different circumstances with many different outcomes. Serving in uniform changes one's perspective, and it binds veterans together. War does affect us, even if we're not in the service. Some of us live in families with veterans. We live in communities alongside veterans. We live in a society that has been altered from wars that never seem to end. In that sense, we too are veterans. I hope we can feel compassion toward each other and all the flavors of human beings and experience that emerge in our stories. The offertory, the music is Welcome Home Anyway that I wrote, which applies to veterans in our generation and today. Thank you. made it back from overseas, oh yeah. Made it back all in one piece, yeah, yeah. I can't wait to see my friends. I can't wait to catch up with them. I can't wait to be home again, yeah, yeah. Last night in a barracks cot, laid out all the civvies that I got, shuffling through the mess hall line, leaving all that gear behind. Love letters are on my mind, yeah, yeah. Discharge papers will be here soon, troop. Police the area, jump through one last hoop. At last I'm out, I'll catch a bus. Spend the night with my friend Gus. But he's gone tomorrow, no time for us. Can't wait to call up my pal Skip. Long Island is a short trip. Skip's not home, he's gone out west. Guess I'll look up my friend Jess. Now she's out with friends, what a mess. Oh! Hotel room in town. Feels like all my friends have let me down. No one cares I was away. No interest in what I have to say. Welcome home anyway. Welcome home. Okay, our closing words are from Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell address. This is a famous address. I know you most of you are familiar with it, but some of the words are unfamiliar to me, so I thought I would read an excerpt. Dwight D. Eisenhower. During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. To all the peoples of the world, I once more express America's continuing aspiration that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity should come to enjoy it to the full, that all who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made to disappear from the earth.